Have you ever stopped to think, I mean, really think, about what keeps a plane in the air or secures our defense systems beyond the big names we all know?
Right. Do you think of the airline, maybe the plane maker?
Exactly. But behind them, there are these, well, powerhouse companies, absolutely critical, but often unseen. So today, we're doing a deep dive into one of those very companies, Safran SA. They're a French multinational, a huge high technology player, a top tier one supplier. Their stuff is literally flying over our heads every day.
And what we want to do here is, we've looked at a lot of research, investment analysis, company reports, industry forecasts, that kind of thing.
Right.
And the goal is really to pull out the key insights for you, help you understand where they stand strategically, their financial health, what's driving their growth, but, without getting lost in all the technical jargon.
Yeah, cutting through the noise. And you'll probably have a few aha moments, like realizing how Safran is connected to almost every flight you take. And also how they're placing this massive bet on, the future of sustainable flying. Okay, let's get into it. Let's unpack this unseen giant.
Sounds good.
So let's start with the basics. Who is Safran? You mentioned they're French.
Yeah, a global player now. It all started back in 2005, really. A merger between SNECMOHEMI, they did engines, aircraft and rocket engines, and Sagem, which was more in the security tech space.
Okay, SNECMe and Sagem.
Right. And then more recently, 2018, they made another big move, acquiring Zodiac Aerospace.
Ah, Zodiac, I remember that.
And the key thing to grasp is that they're a tier one supplier.
Right. What does that actually mean, though, being tier one?
It means they're not just, selling individual components. They design and supply critical integrated systems directly to the big guys, Airbus, Boeing.
Ah, okay, so they're deeply embedded.
Exactly. Deeply embedded in the whole value chain. It gives them a really, really strong position, almost hard to shake.
Interesting. I read something about their strategy, this kind of barbell idea.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. So on one end of the barbell, you've got their propulsion segment. Think aircraft engines.
Okay.
This part is highly concentrated. It's basically a duopoly. Just two main players, especially for narrow body jets, the ones most of us fly on. And it's incredibly profitable.
A duopoly. Wow. So high profits there. What's on the other end?
The other end is much more diverse. It's a portfolio of businesses where they also hold leadership positions, but in different critical equipment markets. Think landing gear, wiring, defense systems, even aircraft interiors.
Ah, okay. Equipment and defense, aircraft interiors, those segments.
Exactly. So that structure, it gives them this this really compelling balance between focused high profit and broader diversification.
Right. Okay, let's zoom in on that propulsion end then. The engine side, the CFM International joint venture with GE Aerospace. That sounds absolutely
Oh,
crucial.
it is. It's the cornerstone.
How does that partnership actually work? Like day to day, who builds which bit of the engine?
It's a really fascinating collaboration, actually. Started way back in 1974.
Wow, 74, long time.
Yeah. So GE Aerospace, they handle the engine's core, what engineers call the hot section.
The hot section.
Yeah, think high pressure stuff, compression, combustion, the high pressure turbine. That's GE's domain.
Okay.
Safran, on the other hand, they focus on the cold section.
Yeah.
So that includes the big fan you see at the front, all the way back to the low pressure turbine.
Got it. Hot is GE, cold is Safran.
Pretty much. And together, as CFM International, they've become, the world's largest commercial engine maker by volume.
The largest by volume.
Yep. Something like 39% market share back in 2020. They've delivered, get this, over 39,000 engines.
39,000.
And those engines have flown over 1.3 billion flight hours.
Incredible numbers.
And their first big hit, the CFM56 engine, best-selling commercial engine in history.
The legend.
Exactly. And its successor, the LEP engine. It's not just matched that success, it's arguably surpassed it. It had something like a 72% market share for narrow body orders by the end of 2022.
72%. That's dominance.
Total dominance. It's the only engine option on the Boeing 737 MAX and China's COMAC C919, and competes head to head with Pratt & Whitney on the Airbus A320neo.
Wow, that JV sounds like a fortress, almost unbreachable. But, you know, looking really long term, are there any scenarios where that competitive advantage, that strategic moat you mentioned, could get maybe not breached, but weakened before 2050?
That's the crucial point, isn't it? They actually extended that CFM partnership back in 2021 all the way out to 2050.
The 2050.
Yep. And that wasn't just, you know, ticking a box for renewal. It was a really profound deepening of that moat. It basically locks out any potential new competitors in this huge narrow-body market for, well, at least another whole generation of aircraft.
Another generation. Wow.
So while nothing's completely unassailable forever, this solidified partnership guarantees them this incredibly valuable long-term stream of aftermarket revenue, spares, repairs, overhauls. That's the really profitable part.
The aftermarket.
And having that locked in for decades, that's fundamental to their financial health. It's a massive, massive competitive advantage.
Okay, so they've got this incredibly strong core business. What about the wider industry? Are things looking good for aerospace right now? What's the most significant implication for a company like Safran?
Well, they're definitely riding some powerful tailwinds at the moment. First off, global air travel. It hasn't just recovered from the pandemic. It actually surpassed 2019 levels in 2024.
Surpassed pre-pandemic levels already.
Yeah. It signals what many are calling a commercial aerospace supercycle and the long-term forecasts. They see passenger traffic more than doubling over the next 20 years. That's huge underlying demand.
Okay, demand is strong. But I keep hearing about problems. Bottlenecks, delays. Airbus and Boeing seem to be struggling to deliver planes.
That's the paradox, exactly. Yeah. Airbus and Boeing have these record backlogs. We're talking over 17,000 aircraft orders combined.
17,000.
Yeah. At the rate they're building them now, it could take like 14 years to clear that backlog.
14 years? Why so slow?
It's down to lingering supply chain headaches, material shortages, finding enough skilled labor. These issues are expected to stick around through 2025, maybe even into 2026.
So if you're running an airline, you can't get enough new planes. That must be frustrating.
Hugely frustrating for them. But
yeah,
it's actually a benefit for Safran.
How so?
Because if airlines can't get new planes easily, what do? They have to fly their existing planes longer and fly them more often, more intensively.
Ah, right. Keep the older fleet working harder.
Exactly. And what does that fuel? The MRO market. Maintenance, repair, and overhaul.
The aftermarket again.
Precisely. Yeah. That MRO market is projected to hit something like $119 billion in 2025. That's 12% higher than it was before the pandemic hit its peak.
Wow. So the bottleneck in new planes actually boosts Safran's repair business.
You got it. And specifically, it extends the service life of that massive, highly profitable fleet of older CFM56 engines.
Their historical bestseller.
Right. And the high margin revenue from spare parts for those older engines, it creates this fantastic cash bridge.
A cash bridge?
Yeah, it helps fund the expensive ramp up of production for the new LE engines. It's this kind of counterintuitive but really strong virtuous cycle working in their favor right now.
That cash bridge idea is clever. A really neat piece of, well, financial reality meeting strategic planning. So, okay, MRO is booming, giving them immediate cash. But what about the really long view, the big challenge facing the whole industry?
Yeah, the elephant in the room, decarbonization.
Net zero by 2050, that's the goal, right?
That's the goal. It's hugely ambitious. And Safran's current LEP engine, well, it's already a big step. It offers about a 15-20% improvement in fuel burn and CO2
right. Compared
to the old CFM56.
So progress, but still a long way to go.
A very long way. But LEP is a key part of the solution today.
Okay. Now, commercial aviation is obviously huge for them, but right. They're not just commercial, right? What about the defense side of things? Are there tailwinds there too?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We can't overlook defense. While commercial is booming, the global defense market is also seeing, well, significantly elevated spending.
Driven by geopolitics, I assume.
Exactly. Geopolitical tensions are pushing budgets up. Projections show global defense spending growing massively from around $2.7 trillion in 2024, potentially up to $6.38 trillion by 2035.
$6 trillion. Wow. And Safran's role?
They're pretty critical in certain areas. They make the M88 engine for the Dassault Rafale fighter jet, for example.
The Rafale, right.
Plus, they do guidance systems, advanced optronics. Those are like high-tech optical and electronic sensor systems for various defense platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, defense is another substantial and growing part of their business.
Got it. Okay, so strong positions in both commercial and defense. What about competition? You mentioned a duopoly in narrow-body engines with CFM LEP versus Pratt & Whitney's GTF.
Right. And interestingly, Pratt & Whitney, or P&W, they've had some quite public struggles with their geared turbofan, the GTF engine, issues with durability and operational reliability.
Yeah, I remember reading about airlines having to ground planes.
Exactly. And that's probably, you know, inadvertently reinforced CFM's reputation for reliability and dependability with the LEP.
So an advantage for Safran G there. What about other areas? Wide body planes.
Wide bodies are a different picture. They're the big engine players are really GE Aerospace again, but also Rolls-Royce. Safran, through CFM, isn't really a major player in the large twin-aisle engine market directly.
Okay. In the equipment and interior segments, more competition there?
Yeah, much more fragmented. You've got big competitors like Collins Aerospace, which is part of RTX now, and Thales, another French giant. So Safran faces more diverse competition in those areas.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's shift gears a bit and talk financials. You mentioned resilience. How did they actually fare through the pandemic downturn?
It's quite remarkable, actually. Their revenue took a big hit in 2020, down about 33%, as you'd expect with planes grounded.
Yeah, third wiped out. Ouch.
But by 2024, they weren't just back. They hit record levels. Revenue reached $27.3 billion. And their main profit measure, they call it adjusted recurring operating profit, or ROI, hit $4.1 billion. Both of those numbers were higher than before the pandemic.
Higher than pre-pandemic. That's a strong recovery.
Very strong. And importantly, their profitability, their operating margin, has been steadily climbing too. It reached a solid 15.1% in 2024.
So they didn't just recover, they got leaner, more efficient.
That's exactly the story. It shows that the cost-cutting measures they had to put in place during the crisis weren't just temporary fixes. They led to real, structural improvements in efficiency. A more profitable organization emerged.
But how did they manage the cash flow during that really tough 2020? That level of resilience seems unusual.
Well, a key strength for Safran is just exceptional cash flow generation. Even in the absolute depths of the crisis in 2020, they still managed to generate over €1 billion in free cash flow.
Over a billion, even then.
Yeah, and that accelerated dramatically as things recovered, hitting a record $3.2 billion in free cash flow in 2024.
Where does that cash resilience come from?
Again, it comes back to that aftermarket business. Spare parts. Repairs. It's highly cash generative, even when new engine sales might dip. That really underpins their financial stability through cycles. Okay, let's break down the segments for 2024. Propulsion, the engine business, must have been the star performer.
Absolutely, the profit engine, as you said. It delivered a really impressive 20.6% operating margin, pulling in $2.8 billion in ROI. And that was driven primarily by that incredibly lucrative CFM56 aftermarket we keep talking about.
Any sense? What about equipment and defense?
That provides crucial stability and diversification. Remember, they have leading positions here in things like landing gear, braking systems, electrical systems, flight controls.
Stuff that's essential on pretty much every plane.
Exactly. It makes them indispensable across many aircraft types. And it provides a steady stream of revenue, particularly with defense spending picking up globally. It had a solid 12.2% margin in 2024.
Okay, steady contributor. And then aircraft interiors, you mentioned that was a turnaround story.
Yeah, quite a remarkable one. This segment was loss-making in 2023, about $116 million down. But in 2024, it swung back to a profit of $27 million.
What drove that turnaround? A couple of things. The recovery in wide-body aircraft travel helped, as interiors are a bigger deal there. Plus, there's a strong trend of airlines retrofitting cabins, upgrading them, and specifically, deliveries of high-value business class seats actually doubled for Safran in 2024.
Doubled. Wow. So catching the premium travel wave.
Precisely. It just shows how they capture value from different parts of the market cycle.
And the balance sheet, how does that look after all this?
Rock solid. You could call it a fortress balance sheet. They ended 2024 with a net cash position of $1.74 billion.
Net cash. So more cash than debt.
Exactly. That's a significant improvement and gives them huge financial flexibility. Plus, they have a strong A investment grade credit rating.
Okay, strong finances, good momentum. What are the big growth drivers looking ahead?
Well, first, don't underestimate the ongoing power of that aftermarket engine business.
The CFM56 again.
Yes, there are still over 30,000 of those engines flying around the world. And here's the kicker. Roughly 45% of that entire fleet hasn't even had its first major overhaul yet.
Nearly half.
Yep. That's a massive reservoir of future high margin revenue just waiting to happen as those engines get older and need servicing over the coming years. It's pretty much locked in.
Okay. Huge embedded aftermarket potential. What else?
Then there's the LAP program ramp up. Remember that huge backlog, over 10,300 engines on order. They're expecting to increase deliveries by another 15-20% in 2025 alone. So strong growth in new engine deliveries too.
Right. More LEAP engines mean more future aftermarket too, eventually.
Exactly. Building the future service base.
Now, you mentioned something earlier, a potentially significant financial turning point in 2025. Something about accounting for EP service contracts.
Ah, yes. This is really interesting and potentially a big catalyst for their reported profits.
How so?
Okay, so up until now, as Safran signed these long-term service agreements for the new EP engines, which are growing rapidly, the accounting rules meant they had to book the revenue from these contracts at basically zero profit margin initially.
Zero margin, even though they'll eventually be profitable.
Correct. It's conservative accounting, booking costs up front. But it has acted as a drag on the overall profitability reported by the propulsion segment, even as the underlying business grew stronger.
Okay, so what changes in 2025?
Starting in 2025, they're changing how they account for this. They'll begin to recognize profit based on the estimated lifetime margins of each service contract right from the start.
Ah, so recognizing the expected profit sooner.
Exactly. Think about it. They're already generating over $3 billion a year in free cash flow before these rapidly growing profitable service contracts are even showing up properly in the profit line.
Right.
So this accounting change is set to unlock a significant new stream of reported earnings and cash flow that was kind of hidden before. It's a really pivotal inflection point for their stated profitability. Could make the numbers look even better.
That's fascinating. A big accounting boost coming. Okay, so that covers the medium term. Looking even further out, post-2035, how are they positioning for the next generation of aircraft and that net zero goal?
That brings us to the RISE program. R-I-S-E.
RISE! What's it?
This is a technology demonstration program. Again, run through the CFM joint venture with GE. It's aimed at developing a, well, radically new engine architecture.
Radically new?
They're working on an open fan design, sometimes called an unducted fan. It looks quite different from today's engines where the fan is enclosed in a nacelle.
An open fan? So like propellers almost, but jets?
Sort of, but much more advanced. It's a significant technological leap. The target is to cut fuel consumption and CO2 emissions by more than 20% compared to even the current LEP engine.
Another 20% beyond a LEPA? That's huge.
It is. And crucially, it's being designed from the outset to run on 100% sustainable aviation fuels, or SAF.
Okay.
And potentially even adaptable for hydrogen fuel in the future. So RISE is really about positioning Safran and CFM right at the forefront for hitting those 2050 net zero targets.
Yeah.
It's a massive technological bet, but essential for their long-term future.
A massive bet indeed. Okay, it sounds like a strong story, but no company is without risks. What keeps Safran's management awake at night? What's the biggest immediate worry?
I'd say the most significant and immediate risk is definitely operational and supply chain related.
Still the bottlenecks.
Yes. These persistent disruptions, shortages of materials, finding enough skilled workers, it directly impacts their ability to ramp up LEP production as planned.
Right.
And maybe even more critically, it affects their MRO turnaround times. How quickly can they get engines serviced and back to the airlines?
And if those turn times slip?
Airlines get very frustrated. An aircraft sitting on the ground waiting for an engine isn't making money. Can damage customer relationships and eat into that highly profitable aftermarket business. So managing the supply chain is priority number one.
Makes sense. What other risks are on the radar?
Well, you always have market and cyclical risks. Commercial aviation is cyclical. Economic downturns or unexpected shocks like another pandemic or major geopolitical flare-ups can hit air travel, reduce flying hours, and cut demand for new planes and services.
The external factors.
Exactly. Then there are competitive and technological risks. We mentioned Pratt & Whitney's GTF issues.
Right.
But if P&W resolves those problems effectively, competition in the narrowbody space could certainly intensify again. And longer term, there's always the perhaps small but real risk that some other company develops a breakthrough propulsion technology that leapfrogs even the RISE open fan concept.
The disruptive innovation threat.
Mm-hmm. And then there are program execution risks closer to home.
Like what?
Like managing that transition from the CFM56 aftermarket to the LEAP aftermarket smoothly. They need to avoid what you might call a profitability air pocket. If CFM56 work declines faster than LEAP work ramps up profitably.
Tricky balancing act.
Very. And the RISE program itself, it's a huge technical and financial challenge. Delivering that on time and on budget is critical. And finally, whenever you make acquisitions, like the pending deal for parts of Collins Aerospace's actuation business, there's always integration risk. making sure it fits culturally and operationally.
Right. M&A always carries risk. You also touched on the French state being a shareholder. Is that a risk factor?
It's let's say a nuanced point. Having the state as a major shareholder can bring stability, a long-term perspective.
Okay.
But it also introduces a slightly different governance dynamic. There's always the theoretical possibility that government objectives, which might not be purely commercial, could influence company decisions.
Yeah.
Though, to be fair, Safran has historically operated with a very strong commercial focus.
Okay. A point to be aware of. So with all this, the strengths, the risks,
yeah,
how does the market value Safran? You mentioned it often trades at a premium.
It does. Often commands a premium valuation compared to peers. You might see it trading at, say, 18 times its enterprise value to EBITDA.
Okay, a standard valuation metric.
Right, compared to maybe 17-ish for Rolls-Royce or mid-15s for Airbus, just as examples.
Why the premium? What does the market see?
It really boils down to confidence in the visibility and predictability of those long-term aftermarket cash flows.
Back to the aftermarket again.
Always. It's just so central. The market sees that stream of service revenue, especially from the CFM engines, as being like a high-quality growing annuity. Very reliable, very valuable.
Like a bond, almost, but growing.
That's a decent analogy. And if you try to value the company using a sum of the parts method, basically valuing each business segment separately.
Right.
The aerospace propulsion segment, the engine business, ends up accounting for a massive chunk of the total value. Probably somewhere between 65% and 70% of Safran's total enterprise value.
65 to 70%. But it's only about half their revenue, right?
Exactly. It massively outweighs its revenue contribution. That just underscores how much value the market places on that high margin, highly defensible commercial engine aftermarket business.
Mm-hmm.
It's the crown jewel.
Clearly. Okay, finally, let's touch on management and how they're steering the ship. Seems like an experienced team.
Very seasoned. You've got Ross McInnes as chairman, Olivier Andriès as the CEO.
Yeah.
Both have deep roots in the industry and within Safran itself.
And their strategy for using that strong balance sheet and cash flow, what's the plan for capital allocation?
They've laid out a very clear, quite disciplined, and definitely shareholder-friendly framework for the 2024 to 2028 period.
Okay. What are the priorities?
First, maintain that strong credit rating. Second, invest heavily in growth and innovation. They've earmarked about $2 billion for R&D with a big focus on decarbonization, like the RISE program.
Makes sense. Invest in the future.
Right. And third, return significant cash to shareholders.
How are they doing that?
They're aiming to return about 70% of the cumulative free cash flow they generate between 2024 and 2028.
70%? That's a lot.
It is. It'll come through two main ways. Maintaining a dividend payout ratio of around 40% of net income, and through a really substantial share buyback program. They've announced a $5 billion buyback plan for 2025 through 2028.
$5 billion in buybacks. That signals strong confidence.
Absolutely. It's a powerful signal from management about their belief in the company's ability to keep generating strong free cash flow.
Yeah.
They also mentioned disciplined M&A, looking for smaller bolt-on acquisitions that fit their core strategy.
Okay, clear priorities, shareholder returns. So wrapping it all up then, Safran SA, it's a really high-quality industrial company, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. High quality, with this uniquely powerful, very defensible position in global aerospace.
And that CFM International joint venture is just central. The gift that keeps on giving with decades of predictable high-margin aftermarket revenue locked in.
Precisely. And they're riding these strong tailwinds now, air travel recovery, the MRO boom. Plus, they're financially robust, record cash flow, net cash on the books, margins expanding.
And key catalysts ahead, too. That AEF profitability change in 2025 sounds important.
Potentially very significant for reported earnings, yeah. And then the long-term strategic bet on the RISE program to secure their future in low-carbon aviation.
Of course, there are risks. That supply chain issue seems like the main one to watch right now.
It is. Navigating those operational hurdles is key. But overall, their strategic position, their business model, it puts them in a really strong place to manage those challenges.
It really is fascinating when you peel back the layers. You know, the next time you're on a plane, maybe glancing out at the engine,
mm-hmm.
knowing what you now know about this company, Safran, that most people haven't heard of, its deep connections to almost every flight, its huge plans for the future of flying, how might that change your perspective as you hurtle through the sky?
Gives you something to think about, definitely.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive today, and as always, we encourage you to continue your own learning journey.